After all the things that have been said throughout the year, these guys are going to be cemented as one of the best stories in Ohio State history and one of the best football teams ever.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Yeah, nobody's making fun of Jeremiah Smith. I'm the Jeremiah Smith of this podcast. Just making bank, selling footballs.
Russ Dellinger.
The only more surprising thing that happened during this game was Dan Wetzel selling footballs all of a sudden.
And SI's Pat Forty. Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Welcome to the pod. About 3 a.m. after the big national title game. So Lord knows what's going to happen here. But let me give you a little scene setter. So that's what the great podcasts do. They take you inside, behind the curtain. Third and 11, 2:45 left in this game. Ohio State once held a 31-7 lead. It's now 31-23. Look to peer on the verge of, like, this cannot be happening kind of collapse. Like, if Notre Dame comes back and somehow wins this game, it'll make the Michigan defeat look like Christmas morning. Over somewhere, they're writing a Rudy reboot with Riley Leonard as the starring role. Buckeyes run Will Howard nowhere twice trying to kill clock, but they're just getting the timeouts taken. The Ryan Day redemption story is on the ropes. Pat and I turn to each other in the press box, great knowers of football, great strategists, and we say, if it doesn't go to Jeremiah Smith here.
Yeah.
And then sure enough, they throw it to Jeremiah Smith. Will Howard to Jeremiah Smith. He catches the damn thing, 56 yards, game over. They run the clock out. They get a field goal to cover. Thank you. Good teams win, great teams cover. And here is Ryan Day. We felt we had an advantage with Jeremiah on that shot. Yeah, they did. We talked about it all week. We hadn't thrown one all game, and it was like, you know what? Game on the line, let's just go. Let's, you know, be aggressive. I just thought to myself, only one national championship. You only get one opportunity a year to do this. Let's just lay it on the line, put it out there, and be aggressive. And I have to say, that is everything that they did not do in the Michigan game. This was the redemption moment for Ryan Day. As simple as throw it to four, but it was a hell of a pass, and it was still a high-risk play throwing that deep. Pat, did I retell this incredible moment properly?
I believe you did capture the press box drama there, as there was like three seats in between us or whatever. And at the moment, like, everybody else had gone. Like, I think Ross had gone downstairs and Jay Busby had gone downstairs. And so there wasn't anybody there. And then I looked at you and I said, are they turtling? And you said, they got to throw it to Smith here. And yes, lo and behold, they listened. You know, they're probably pod listeners, probably waiting, you know, they know what. What would Wetzel, Forty, and Dellinger want us to do here? They'd want us to go deep, and so they did. And it's a hell of a play. Bold, brazen, but beautiful because it worked. And I asked Chip Kelly about it afterwards, and he said, yeah, you know, you just throw it to your best player and let him run by everybody. So sounds simple, but perfect execution, and it did take some cojones to pull it off when it really did look like they were getting scared of the moment.
Yeah, it did. I was down on field level, not on the field. We weren't allowed on the field yet, but I was in the back watching on a TV. Me and Bruce Feldman actually standing next to each other, kind of looking at each other like, what are they doing? Like, you know, like, what are they doing here? They're just running and they're basically kneeling the ball with like 3 minutes left. And I thought on third and 11, if on first and second down, they basically just gave it to Howard just to run, you know, into the back of the line, that they would probably just do it again. And when he backed up and backed up and launched one, I was kind of shocked. And there he was, right, Jeremiah, just wide open down the sideline. After the game, Yeah, I think Pat was right there when we talked to Chip Kelly, right? And you know, he mentioned that somebody asked him, boy, that's a gutsy play. And he said, well, if it doesn't work, or he said, it's only gutsy if it works. If it doesn't work, ... right? You're basically screwed. So I don't know what percentage that play would be. Danny mentioned it's probably still a low percentage play. You know, that's probably right. I don't know what it was like in the regular season, what Ohio State was on a play like that, on a long pass play like that. I'm guessing it's around 50-50 probably during the season. So, yeah, not a super high probability of a play. Was a gutsy play. Pretty incredible way to end the longest college football season in the history of the sport, that it ends in the hands of probably its most electric player.
Yeah, I don't know if it's 50. I mean, Will Howard's got to throw a very good pass. It doesn't have to be perfect because Jeremiah Smith is open, and he is one-on-one out there and all of that. And Notre Dame, Freeman said, you can play zone. They can get you. They felt they needed to get pressure on Will Howard and get home. And I think that was probably the key to this game, was Notre Dame could not get pressure on Will Howard without blitzing. And then you just picking your poisons on this stuff. So it was, but I mean, you can throw it to, it's third and 11. You don't have to throw it 50 yards down the field.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, the guy runs these incredible routes, could be down and out 15.
Yeah. Well, that, the added dynamic of it, that Chip said and they did this often with Will Howard, and he was smart enough to almost always make the right call. They would give him two plays when he went to the line. Said, if you see zone, throw shorter, you know, underneath, and we'll try to run, you know, catch and run to the first down, or we'll just punt it. He said, but if you get man and they're singled on Jeremiah, go deep. And that was the look, and that was the execution.
Can you guys imagine if that play doesn't work and they have blown a 24-point lead and they turtled up first few downs, and then they launched a ball 50 yards down the field when they needed 11 and say it didn't work. They punt the ball and they end up losing that game. What kind of aftermath that would be for Ryan Day?
It was falling apart. At Notre Dame had gotten this. They just started moving. I mean, the game was over. It was over. 31-7. And then they got moving. And all credit to Notre Dame. They just did not give up. And Riley Leonard started throwing the ball better. Great House turned out to be, I didn't want to, he's the second best receiver on the field, but for a while there, he's the first best because they weren't throwing it to Jeremiah Smith. But I mean, he was playing terrific. They were moving the ball. They get down, you know, they get it to 15, and then they get it to, or what, they're down 16, right? And then they get down there and they're at 4th and 9. From the, I don't know what they're at, the 14-yard line or something. They're inside the 20. And Marcus Freeman goes for a field goal instead of going for it, which, looking at all the things, made no sense at all. He said, I think it was 4th and 9 or 10. I just thought, instead of being down 16, let's try to go down 13. I know it's still a two-score game, but you have a better probability of getting 14 than you 16 points. If it was a shorter 4th and goal, I probably would have gone for it, but I just felt 4th and 9 was not a great chance for us to make that and decide to kick. And then, of course, the kick doinks off the upright. But that play there was baffling, because if they had gotten that, and I understand it's 4th and 9 and Notre Dame, it's a tough go, and Ohio State is like just vicious on these goal line esque stands. This wasn't a true goal line stand, but it kind of won them. But let's say they convert there and they get that game, and then they come back and score again to get it down to 8 again. But if they had ever tied that game up, I don't know. I don't know if Ohio State was going to survive it. I mean, I give them all the credit. Ohio State deserves credit for this. They bounce back from that Michigan game, and they bounce back from this. Like when the chips were down this time, they did not blow the game, and they won the game, and they won the national championship, and that's all it. But man, there were some moments there that you just didn't see coming, and you're like, God, this is going to get really scary. And I think Marcus Freeman let him off the hook by not going for it on that 4th and 9.
He kicked a field goal to try to get the 2-touchdown lead to a 2-touchdown deficit to a 2-touchdown deficit.
Yeah.
I mean, it really didn't make sense mathematically. It didn't make sense time and score. That was an odd one. The only more surprising thing that happened during this game was Dan Wetzel selling footballs all of a sudden.
NIL deal, huh, Dan?
We're already in on this, huh?
Yeah. I think we need to discuss
it. We waited 12 minutes. Here. That's plenty of time.
Yeah. I'm selling footballs. I'm a partnership. Right. I'm an influencer, Pat. Nicko Sports. Yeah. You want a commemorative Ohio State National Championship football? Go to Nicko Sports. They got this ball. It's looking good.
Yeah.
You just NIL for all, Pat. NIL for all. Don't be jealous. Don't be hating me because I got the NIL deal here.
I respect the hustle. The two people I saw shilling and Nicko footballs were you and Urban Meyer. So there's your
company on this. Good company there, huh?
Urban's in on it too. Yeah. We know how to make that paper. Yeah, I'm getting a lot of heat for this. It's a good looking football, quality product for those Buckeye fans to remember the great 2025 national championship.
They're not paying you extra to plug it on the pod, Dan.
You don't know that.
We need guardrails on guardrails.
Yeah. No, that's they're right. Not.
You're capped, Dan. You're capped. Your cash is capped at a certain amount. If that they has to go through the clearinghouse too, this deal.
No, there's no clearinghouse. No. No clearinghouse. Don't hate. Everyone's all over me. I'm getting roasted on Twitter for this by our listeners. But hey,
and rightfully so. That's how they are. They're keeping to their true selves.
Yeah, nobody's making fun of Jeremiah Smith. I'm the Jeremiah Smith of this podcast. Just making bank, selling footballs.
Right. Lord,
it's a good looking football.
The Jeremiah Smith of this podcast.
Me and Herb.
You and Herb.
Herb selling them too. This is good.
I saw that. I was like, oh boy. What company?
I wonder what Herb got.
Your ally. Your ally is Urban Meyer.
I bet Herb got more. I bet Urban got more than me.
Mm-hmm. See, it's going to fracture the locker room. Different payouts. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Nicko Sports. Come on. Well, I got to talk to those guys. Anyway, you need a football. Yeah. I mean, you got to do what you got to do. If people would just go out there and buy more epic athletes, I wouldn't have to be on Twitter hawking footballs.
You know, we haven't talked too much about Notre Dame, but Dan, you think you kind of nailed it. Notre Dame just couldn't get pressure on Will Howard. And Ohio State's offensive line, outside of Will, might have been the star of the night. They blocked for him, but they also opened some gashing holes. And a couple of these holes for the running backs were huge. So give it up for Ohio State's O-line. It was pretty impressive as a position group, kind of won the day for them, and they've done that all playoff. You know, afterward, Dan was right there, but we briefly interviewed Big Ten Commissioner Tony Petitti, which is a rarity for Tony Petitti to give an interview, but he did after that game and said he thought it was the Ohio State's run is the best run, the greatest run in college football history, which you can imagine a year after Michigan had their run, is getting a little play on the Twitter sphere.
I mean, the playoff run is incredible. And that's even though there were some tense moments tonight, there were some tense moments against Texas. The bottom line is they won four playoff games against top 10 teams by double figures, and the average margin was 17.5, and Notre Dame scored first. It's the first time Ohio State had been behind in the playoff, but it was still, I mean, it was a blast furnacing from their offense to start this game. Scored the first five times they had the ball. It was 31-7. They just had Notre Dame completely on the run, pushed around, confused, outmanned, out-athleted, everything. And that's the Ohio State offense throughout this playoff has just been an absolute thing of beauty.
All right, they win this playoff. They beat, and I'm just looking at the final rankings by the College Football Playoff Committee. They beat number one Oregon. They beat number three Texas. They beat number four Penn State. They beat number five Notre Dame. They beat number seven Tennessee. They beat Penn State during the regular season. They also beat number eight Indiana in the regular season. So those are the top eight teams. So they beat six of the top eight. What, they are one of the top eight, right? They're number six. So there's seven teams they could beat. They beat six of them. The only team they didn't play was Georgia, who lost to Notre Dame. That's a hell of a season. Additionally, they led their four college football playoff games for 193 out of 240 minutes. They led 154 of those minutes by two scores or more. They trailed for only 6 minutes in the playoffs, 605. The whole season, they trailed just 81 minutes and 55 seconds out of 960 minutes. So 8% of the whole season. They lost two games, mind you. Is this a better run than Michigan? I find it interesting Petitti was choosing. Because normally what are these guys always? Oh, don't make me compare. I don't know why he was choosing, but maybe we do know why. Certainly will fuel plenty of speculation, but I don't know which is a better season. Ohio State has more quality wins than the 15-0 Michigan season, which, if you remember, nothing happened until they beat Penn State, and they had to beat Penn State and Ohio State late, and then they had to beat Alabama, and they had to beat Washington. That was their, so they only had four. Iowa was in the Big Ten championship game. I don't know. Which one's better, Pat? Is Petitti correct?
I mean, for an entire season.
But they didn't lose. They also didn't lose.
That's the thing. For an entire season, going 15-0 is better than this. 14-2. 14-2 is damn good. And the teams they beat, damn good. And the way they did it in the playoff, damn good. I'm not taking anything away from them, but the loss to Michigan threw such a black mark, I guess, on the season. It was one that they could overcome thanks to the expanded playoff, but you can't remove that from the equation. You can see, I think, how much they learned from it. It looked like it was a burial ground. It turned out to be a launching pad. They got way better after that game. But this was a team that was playing with a lot of pressure on it. I mean, did you guys see what Ryan Day did in the final seconds of the game? He took off his headgear. He unclipped it from his belt. He started running down the sideline and he threw it almost into the stands, threw it like 50 feet into the air. And just was like, "Woo! I am done with this burden. I am done with it." It was like that was the symbolic nature of it. I asked him about it after he did the Van Pelt show, and I asked him about it. He said, "Yeah, that was nice." He said, "I wanted to smash it." And I think that was kind of like this was his cathartic release moment of like, just I'm done with all of the pressure. I am now a national champion. We finished the deal. I don't care about the Michigan loss. We got it done. It was pretty cool.
So, Ross, I'm reading this tweet quote. Is he talking? He said, "That's the greatest run in college football history." So it's not obviously Michigan last year is part of that, but there's a lot more teams that can be pretty ticked off.
Oh,
some
yeah.
Miami Hurricanes. For sure.
Oh, yeah.
I thought the way you laid it out, it was
all in
like
my mentions.
Oh, I thought you were saying like he did it, like he was choosing between Michigan and Ohio State specifically.
No, I mean, it just obviously it comes a year after, right? I mean, so
I got you.
You know, but yeah, you're right. There's certainly plenty of programs that are going to take offense to that quote. But I think when you went through it, I think one of the because the follow up question was why, right? I think you were right there. You walked up right at that.
Beat
moment.
All these teams, yeah.
And he, yeah, it's because they beat all these teams. He went through some of it just like you just did, where they beat basically they beat what six of everybody. The top eight or whatever. Yeah. I mean, it was remarkable. It was remarkable the teams that they beat on the way there. A lot of them on the road too. These neutral site playoff games. It was yeah. I mean, there's some argument to be made for the quality of teams that they beat as being the best or right up there with the best of any other championship team as far as the strength of schedule, you know?
That's why you can relive it on this football. It's the commemorative yes. football. You can relive it.
Yeah. That's enough. That's yeah, enough yeah. of that.
Football.
Yeah.
Very good chance for a good Buckeye fan thing to do. Greatest run. I get the playoff bit. You're going to lose me with, like, was it 2001 Hurricanes?
Yeah.
I mean, he's not saying the great.
Well, let's see. How about the LSU 2019?
LSU 2020 Alabama?
Yeah.
2020 yeah, Alabama, year, only yeah. SEC. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's why I didn't do that many interviews.
Dan.
I don't know.
Dan.
Appreciate it. Gave us a topic. But thank you, Tony. I don't know. Yeah, well, they're probably not too excited about that. Do you see when after the game when the Ryan Day and them were on the golf cart and the golf cart got smashed into the wall?
Yeah.
Yeah, that golf cart crashed. The woman driving the golf cart just what floored it right into the wall.
Right into the wall.
What was that?
Yeah.
Somebody
out. I think they ended up getting out. Nobody was hurt. I believe nobody was hurt. And they just left it and walked into the presser. There you go.
Somebody did quip that Atlanta has bad winter drivers.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Dog stats, yeah. I think, on yeah.
It was cold in there. It was a little chilly
icy?
In those.
I think it was icy. That's why she just. Atriums. Why did she just run it directly into the wall?
Well, I mean, you know, sometimes you just
like a Michigan spy, like driving the driving the cart. You got to. I'm sure
that
would
have been
this video.
That would have been something, right? If she was going a little faster, everybody gets thrown into the wall. You just won a national championship. Here's your reward. You're thrown into the concrete wall.
Yeah, you survive four quarters of Xavier Watts hitting you, but you die in a in a golf cart accident. That was
second memorable playoff golf cart moments for Ohio State. If you remember,
yes.
Urban Meyer sitting eating pizza in one.
Yeah,
except was that the Big Ten championship game?
Big Ten title game. Sad Urban with the pizza. Yeah, Ryan. I don't know what happened. I can't stop watching the video though. It's just, I don't know. So if I don't know who the person is, and sorry to bring more tumult to your life, but like, do you just quit the job after that? Like, what do you get paid to be the driver? Like, who is this? What is going on?
We need to get to the bottom of this, don't we, Dan?
Guardrails. We need guardrails so they don't smash into the wall of the Mercedes-Benz Center.
Unfortunately, this poor woman's now, we're all going to find out.
I don't want to know her name. Live. Just be the woman that drove him right. I mean, she floored it. It was like trading
paint. It might be one of those panic moments. You know, they say when you accidentally hit the gas instead of the brake. And I've done that on a scooter before. It did not end well.
No,
you've ever had a teenager learning to drive. They will sometimes make the same sort of mistake and. That's what this looked like.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of pressure. It's like that. Yeah. They were putting that, the video of that Mike Myers movie where he's like trying to go back and forth in the.
Oh, yeah. The little golf cart. He's backing up an inch at a time. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. But she didn't even back it up. I don't even know if it's operational. They just got out. They left it against the concrete wall, and they just got out and walked into the presser. Yeah. Well, so, when we were, Pat, did you hear it?
Football playoff profit margin. No.
Did you guys hear that? We were in the presser.
Oh, this is great.
No, we were inside the press room. But now that I think about it, I don't know that I heard the crash as much as like a lot of racket right before they came in. There was like a laughter and yelling, and maybe it was the aftermath of the crash.
It's tremendous.
There you go.
Cutting into the profit margin of the playoffs there.
They're down a cart. Yeah. It looked like that thing got busted, like the tie rod broke or something. I don't know. It was inoperable. Yeah, I'm not sure what happened there. That's Big Ten takes over, and the SEC's a little salty about it. And so now they're trying to wreck the Big Ten coaches. I saw a guy in a sweatshirt calling it. He had it printed on the sweatshirt, playoff of Northern aggression.
Oh.
I think we invented that.
Yeah, we need royalties for that.
This is why I got a Hawk football, because I'm not getting I need an NIL deal on that.
I think that was actually my phraseology, so I'm taking the NIL from that.
Well, it looked like a homemade sweatshirt.
Mm.
But if you were the pod listener at the game with a sweatshirt that said that, then reveal yourself to us. I saw you. I couldn't get over to you. It looked like I was like one of our listeners. I met a guy at he's from Wheelersburg, Dan Jarvis from Wheelersburg, Ohio. He had a sign, front row seat, $8,000, hotel, $1,000, SEC watching from home, priceless.
Oh boy.
He also was wearing spiked Ohio State, like Ohio State football pads with spikes on it. He was well adjusted.
Yeah, the Northern aggressors are living it up now, and they should. Big Ten's won consecutive titles. SEC hadn't played in either of them. Texas was, which is kind of a bootleg SEC team, was the only one to make the semifinals. So, and to come down here to Atlanta and turn it into your own party, it's a pretty heady moment. The SEC will be back. It's not dead. It's not done. But for the moment, the Big Ten has earned all the bragging rights.
First Big Ten back-to-back national champs since, can anyone come up with this? A little championship game trivia?
Boy, oh boy. You're going to have to go back.
1965 and 66, Michigan State won both years. Some share of it. Who knows?
Yeah, that's a bogus one.
They won maybe one of them. Didn't they tie Notre Dame in a game?
They tied Notre Dame 10-10.
Oh, 10-10, yeah.
I think Notre Dame got the actual championship in 1966.
Well, this is what the college football playoff people claiming. There was a lot of champions back then. But basically that was before the South. I mean, they had segregation.
Yeah. Michigan State teams were well integrated and had some absolute stars.
Yeah. And a lot of them were from the South. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the only place to go play. Okay. The last outright were 1940 to 42. Okay.
That'd be,
Minnesota, and then Ohio State.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. 1966, Notre Dame won the AP and UPI championships. Michigan State got the National Football Foundation. That was it. So I'm not buying that one.
The Lansing State Journal title?
Yeah. Right.
I don't know.
The people's choice.
Yeah. Minnesota. Yeah. So it just doesn't happen.
No,
it doesn't happen in the North, but it is now. So it'd be kind of wild. Like they haven't done it even at all, even to claim it since before desegregation or integration, either way you want to put it. And then in the SEC. And then now after NIL, they're back.
Yeah.
I saw, I think it was Dave Biddle said, Brian Day now has more national championships than Bo Schembechler.
It ought to go over well.
Wow.
True. True, though. All right, we'll be back right after this. Speaking of bitter SEC, can you play Joe? You know, we had the presidential inauguration today and on C-SPAN. So on C-SPAN, I guess they take callers on C-SPAN. I did not know this. It's like the Feinbaum show of politics. Trump ain't played nobody, Paul. I don't know what they're doing, but apparently on C-SPAN, they open it up to callers. I thought they just did the hearings. But anyway, and you can call in on one of three lines. You can call in as a Republican, a Democrat, or an independent. I don't know if there's like the honor system here or how they shake this out. So they got a call. This guy was from New Jersey, and he was on the Democratic line. So they were expecting some complaints about the direction of America. But Joe, can you play? This is on C-SPAN today. This is kind of C-SPAN Super Bowl, you know?
Yeah. Right?
They'd be pretty excited about Inauguration Day. A lot going on for the C-SPANers. Play this thing.
I'm a bit more disappointed in the selection committee for not picking Alabama for the college football playoff finals. Instead, picking inferior teams like SMU and Indiana. Truly dark times in America.
Okay.
Truly dark times in America. Roll damn tide.
Oh, my God.
Earlier in the thing, he'd said he was upset Alabama didn't get in. If you listen to the full clip. Yeah. So there you go. Country's just falling apart. Bama's not in the playoff, and then C-SPAN is they cut him off. I don't think that's very. Why can't you talk about whatever?
C-SPAN? I think the Alabama fans have already, like, people have stopped listening to them, so they're trying to find fresh outlets here, and C-SPAN would probably qualify. Still complaining. It's January 20th. Selection Sunday was what? December 6th?
And they lost to Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even they had their Feinbaum starters play. They lost to Michigan.
Yeah.
Even Feinbaum has moved on, and they haven't.
So Notre Dame, epic opening drive, right? 18 play, 9 minute, 45 second. Riley Leonard here, there. They convert fourth downs, like for two thirds, just incredible. And it was like, oh my goodness, like, could this happen? And they just didn't have their defense just could not stop the firepower of Ohio State. But the comeback, and I said, I was pretty down on the 4th-and-9 call, but hey, where's Notre Dame go from here? I mean, they acquitted themselves with great fight by staying in this thing and making it a game. I seems like bright days ahead, Pat.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, that's kind of, I think, the DNA of this Notre Dame team. And if it's the DNA of the program going forward, they're in great shape. And I think they are. But, you know, if you saw them against Penn State, they were not going to give up. They were not going to submit. There was a time when that game was going sideways on them. Didn't matter. So they kept swinging here and made a game out of it very improbably, and I give them a lot of credit for that. Not a lot of composure shown apparently after the game. Some kind of confrontations in the locker room with players screaming obscenities at reporters and coaches telling reporters not to ask questions and stuff. Yeah. Apparently it was a little amateur hour in the locker room, but the program has impressed the hell out of me this year. And if you look at so many of the key players in this game, Riley Leonard didn't coming back, but so many other guys are. I mean, that is a team that played a ton of freshmen this year. And Quinshon Judkins baptized a couple of them on one of his touchdown runs when he stiff-armed Jaden Osbury and he ran through Leonard Moore. That's a redshirt freshman and a true freshman. But those guys are good players who are going to get better. They're going to get bigger and stronger. Greathouse, unbelievable the way he performed. He's coming back. Jeremiah Love coming back at running back. They have got a lot of very good players. It was a young offensive line because they dealt with so many injuries and so many guys got experience there. If they figure out who their quarterback is, whether it's, you know, Steve Angeli or CJ Carr, or they dip back into the market, which would be kind of late at this point, you know, I think they're going to be, they're a top five team for sure starting next year, in my opinion, maybe top three.
Yeah, they got, you think at quarterback, they got some good options there. Obviously, Carr was super highly rated and they really like him a lot. He's got an injury, but it shouldn't hold him back, I don't think, from even spring ball. But Angeli, we saw him in a quick burst against Penn State look really, really good. I mean, it was a very small sample size, obviously, but that was a huge game against a good defense, and he showed out pretty well. So it does seem like the future is bright there. You know, Marcus Freeman signed that big new deal, and a lot of folks say that the NFL is very much interested in him, but I think the last time he was asked about it, he cited the contract, the new contract that he signed. And look, Notre Dame got $20 million from this playoff run. And next year, a similar type of distribution model exists where it's performance-based. The CFP would distribute based on how you advance in a round, and they can, you know, get 20 more, $4 million for the first two rounds, $6 million for the second. And then starting in 2026, things change a little bit, and it'll be base distribution. But they're the only team, Dan, that in the new revenue distribution model starting in 2026, they not only get base, but they're the only team that gets performance distribution as well still. I believe it's $4 million a win. I have to go check that. But they are very squarely satisfied with their independence, and the future very much looks bright there in South Bend.
Schedule next year. They open at Miami. Ohio State opens with Texas at home. Really kind of really interesting. Yeah, those are their two openers. I think it's at home. Texas is at home against Texas. Yeah, semifinal rematch. So they're getting they're at Miami to start the season. Then they get Texas A&M in South Bend. Then they got Purdue. They're at Arkansas. Boise State visits. In USC visits. So your first six games are at Miami, Texas A&M, Purdue, at Arkansas, Boise State, USC. And then they finish with Navy, at Pitt, at BC, NC State, and Syracuse. I don't know, Stanford's not on there anymore. But so they're going to be ready to rock. So this is going to be high-profile team once again. I agree. I think they also have a really good recruiting class, and I just like – Marcus Freeman's finding guys. They're not top 25 players, but his young players are really good. And so if that continues, they're going to have some more game breakers there. Great House was incredible.
Yeah.
He was just two monster TDs there. So,
yeah. I mean, his ability, his run after catch. Wow. Not just breaking tackles, but moves too. And he had the ankle breaker against Penn State in the Orange Bowl as well. So only good things probably happening for him coming up.
Yeah. So really epic for both teams. I think they're both really, you know, obviously Ohio State, I think, will be very good again. I don't think that's going to be a problem. Julian Sayin, redshirt freshman who started at Alabama, transferred after Nick Saban retired, will probably be their starting quarterback, but yeah, these programs are here for the stay, so it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, Ohio State loses a ton, obviously, of all the guys that they kept around, but they also bring back, for my money, probably the best offensive player and the best defensive player in the country in Jeremiah Smith and Caleb Downs. It's a pretty good place to start, and as we know, they always have quality talent on hand there to fill in for some of the people that are
leaving. Caleb Downs can't go pro?
No, it's the second year. He's a true sophomore. Yeah.
Yeah, Caleb Downs and Jeremiah Smith. Right? Yeah.
Gosh,
two players that probably be the top, would be the first round picks, maybe top 10 picks or something. And they're going to be coming back to college, one of them, for two more years. It's just hard to believe that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Maybe not Caleb for two, but yeah. Jeremiah, he needs to file a lawsuit. Everyone else is sticking around, right? They want to stay 9 years. Jeremiah's like, get me out of here.
Yeah. Well, Ohio State in the new redshirt world, Dan, we actually saw Ryan Day during his press conference. I thought it was pretty fascinating. He brought up the number. I don't think he said 20 million for their roster, but he hinted it. He danced around it and then basically said, look, our players are that valuable. They're worth that in the city of Columbus and at Ohio State, almost setting it up, right, for the true NIL world, for them to go above the cap in the new rev share world and get true NIL. It was actually a pretty fascinating quote, he said. And afterward, I talked to Russ Bjork about the investment in the program and how much, you know, they invested and spent. And one of his quotes was about the number, the $20 million number for the roster. You can have all the money, all the collectives you want, but if you don't have a foundation of leadership and culture and chemistry, then it's not going to matter. We've seen programs spend a lot of money, some even more than us, and they didn't reach this point. Of course, everybody probably is aware that he was at one of those programs. He was the AD at Texas A&M, and they probably spent more than anybody in the first year of NIL. And, we all know how that ended.
Yeah. Yeah, that didn't pan out. Sliced Bread? Yeah, his reporting on that.
Bro Slicer. Bible, Dan, yes.
Bro Bible. From Sliced Bro Bible. Bread
posting on Bro Bible, I think.
Was it. Yeah. Yeah, he said, he was saying, you can say whatever you want. People talked a lot about how much money guys were making in NIL and different things like that. That was just because NIL was available. Majority of our team came back. These guys have been here a long time. And it's no doubt they paid those guys to come back, and that's great. They also paid Jeremiah Smith to come.
Yeah.
And then certainly Will was a huge addition. Yeah, I think so. That'd be Will Howard. Caleb was a huge addition. Don't get me wrong. Yep, yep. Mm-hmm. But when you hear that number, that doesn't mean a whole lot other than the fact that the market value for our guys in Columbus at Ohio State is pretty high. That's what it means. When that got tagged on us early, there was a lot of pressure put on our players. Yes, yeah, so the pressure of being rich. It's very difficult. It's very difficult. It's the pressure I feel trying to hawk these footballs.
Yeah.
Commemorative football.
We need a sales update.
Haters like you guys trying to tear me and Urban Meyer down. We're just trying to help out with a little commerce here.
I need to know how the sales are going. We need like real time.
Better get in now because there's only 10,000 limited edition, Pat.
Only 10,000.
Yes, limited edition.
But how many are using your promo code versus Urban's promo code?
I'm crushing Urban. Come on. Kidding me?
I'm sure the NIL payments to each of them reflect that.
Football 25 is the promo code. I don't know what Urban says. I got to check. It's all right. Me and Urban, teammates, moving commemorative footballs here. I did find that interesting too. First off, it was like, yeah, our guys are going to make a lot of money. And this is the part of we talk about, like, Ohio State, they got this huge school. I looked it up, it's 67,000 people, kids going there. Massive thing. Columbus, Ohio, 2.2 million people live in the metro area. They don't have an NFL team. They have a hockey team. That's it. Like, this is the team. Indianapolis isn't as big as Columbus, Ohio. A lot of places aren't as big as Columbus, Ohio. They have NFL teams. They have multiple pro sports teams. This is it for Columbus. And besides the rest of the state. So whatever it's going to cost going forward, Ohio State's going to set that standard. Like, they're not going to blink. Certainly there's some other wealthy places and wealthy schools out there, but what do they call it? What do your guys like to say? Alignment, Ross? That's a big one, right?
Alignment.
Alignment, yeah, with the president and the AD and the coach. I think Ohio State would say it's got alignment very much so. In fact, they'd said that multiple times to me when I visited there. We talked about that story I wrote maybe 2.5 weeks ago or so about the above the cap NIL, and Ohio State was the center, at the center of that story, because they potentially have them in Texas probably have the ability, because of the alumni base, because of the brand, because of the city where they are, as Dan just went through all the points there, their alumni base, I think it's like the fifth or sixth biggest in the country, 700,000 or something living alumni, you know, that they've got millions in what they say is real NIL. So they've got the ability to do that. In fact, during the game, I got a text from another athletic director, and it was about how talented Ohio State was, of course. Wow, they're loaded, right? He texted me. And then he said, well, they'll have to take a pay cut next year in the revenue share world. And then I let him know that they will not be taking a pay cut, that they have enough probably brand value in the community there that they will be able to go and strike real deals with athletes and probably get it through the clearinghouse. And I think Ryan Day was setting that up with his quote. And it just struck me. Pat and I are sitting there next to each other in the news conference. I kind of looked up, jolted by him talking about
that. So just to be clear, like technically you're not supposed to give this NIL money. And next year with the rev share, there's going to be how good the NCAA is at investigating these things at payments. They've done a great job cutting that out when you couldn't get anything. They're going to be able to say fake NIL payment, fake NIL payment, opposed to like real services provided, like me and my commemorative footballs of the championship season. That's real service. But because Ohio State's so popular, they're going to be able to throw that money out there, and they're in a big market. So who are you to say the car dealerships, the Ford dealerships of Central Ohio? Well, that's a little more than the Ford dealer in Starkville. They got it. So yeah, they're going to put Deloitte on a. They're going to put Deloitte on skates here.
Yeah, Deloitte. Yeah. In charge of the clearinghouse has to clear all these, yeah. any deal that's affiliated with a booster or affiliated with a school, an entity in some way, has to go through the clearinghouse. Should be.
I can see Jeremiah process. Smith getting like real Nike money, like real commercials and stuff.
Jeremiah Smith, why not? Is probably, I'm gonna say, would be able to be Madden in line cover. For well over $1 million in NIL next year. And maybe even over $2 million.
Oh, he's going to Caitlin Clark levels practically. Yeah, he's going to be
$2-3 million. Yeah, I would absolutely.
He's a well. I mean, the way he carries himself.
It depends on how much he wants to kind of work at it, though, right? Because a lot of this is, hey, show up for this autograph session, do this commercial, do these tweets. So you got to be able to do some of this stuff. And you know, that's one of the things.
Tell it to me, brother. I'm living it right now with this.
Here we go. Hey, Pat, if he brings this damn football up one more time, I say we end the pod. It's 3:30 a.m. Damn it.
We are close to ending the podcast here unilaterally.
Commerce does not end. Okay, more on this just a second. So let's get to this story with Xavier Lucas, who is a defensive back for Wisconsin, who he just wants to go to Miami and continue his education.
Yeah.
He played football at Wisconsin, and now he wants to go to Miami, go to the U, get his thing, and maybe play a little football. He's from South Florida. His father is supposedly not feeling great. Ailing, I think, is what his attorney said. I hope he feels better. We don't, you know, we make a lot of jokes about that, but it's not funny if it's true. So he wants to go back to Miami, and Wisconsin isn't letting him out of their deal because they said he signed a 2-year deal. There's a lot of confusion. There's the Big Ten has stepped in on the side of Wisconsin. Wisconsin's issued statements. Ross, what's the latest on this? No one's seen the contract, so we don't know what's in it.
Yeah, we've seen some versions of the – it's a template contract from the Big Ten, a template rev share contract that a lot of the schools are using. But the schools are changing things. They're adjusting language. But The gist is, Dan, is Xavier Lucas was a freshman last season, and not long after the season, he signed a ref share contract, and all these ref share contracts are contingent on the settlement being approved in April, and then the pay will start in July, and that's an important part that I'll come back to. So he signed a ref share deal, and about 10 days later or so, after he went home for Christmas, he came back, and he is from South Florida. He went home, and he came back, and he requested to be put in the portal. Wisconsin said, nope, right? You signed a ref share. We're not putting your name in the portal. He got an attorney, and they started – they were very close to actually filing a lawsuit against Wisconsin and the NCAA on antitrust grounds. And at the last minute, they decided, you know what? And this is something that's been the case now, Dan, for several months. It's just kind of going on the radar. The transfer portal is kind of unenforceable. A player can just withdraw from school and enroll at another school if they want. And the NCAA really can't do anything about it because of a ruling in Ohio that happened in, I believe, in March or April. So the portal just gives coaches the ability to contact the players. But we all know there's illegal tampering going on all the time. So he unenrolled. He withdrew from Wisconsin. He enrolled academically at Miami. As you'd expect, Miami admitted him at 5:15 p.m. Eastern on a Friday. So I was sitting ready for a go because I'd been chasing this story for about a week, week and a half. And it is, of all the things that happened last week, we talked about the DOJ letter with the House case and the Department of Education letter and the Title IX and all that stuff. That stuff is probably going to be rescinded and taken out by the new presidential administration. This is a significant story. And the way this story is going to end will set a precedent, not just for the portal and the enforcement of the portal, but the enforcement of these rev share agreements, which are contingent on the settlement being approved. And that's the big thing that Xavier Lucas's lawyer is saying is makes the contract unenforceable is the contingency clause. So a lot going on there. This is happening in other places. It's just probably not gotten out publicly. But we're going to see this start to happen, and schools and conferences are going to be very aggressive, as we've seen the Big Ten and Wisconsin come out and basically say, hey, we have evidence Miami tampered. And it sounds like to me they're building a case for torturous interference and a lawsuit being filed probably after the settlement is approved.
Miami's a very dull place when it comes to transfers, isn't it? I mean, Jaden Rashada and this and the Cavenders and John Ruiz and Life Wallet and whatever. Anyway, this is interesting. No, I mean, this will be fascinating to watch. As you said, Ross, I mean, like every student has the ability to withdraw from one school and enroll at another. The question is, yeah, what's your employment status, so to speak, with the one school you leave? And can you then be employable without being an employee, of course, at another one? So I don't know how this is going to end. The initial like public sentiment I've seen on this, and this is from people who probably really aren't even interested in going into the details of it, but is basically, good, we want to see a school sue somebody for trying to leave. We want, you know, the fans are tired of the constant, you know, migration of players, and they want to see somebody try to hold a player accountable and make them stay in place. Now, is it going to work? I don't know. But that's kind of the inclination I got off of the initial reaction to this.
Nobody wants them moving unless they're coming to your school.
Well, yeah, right. Yes, yes.
Then it's okay. I got to see this contract. Look, if you sign a deal that's a 2-year deal, then you got to adhere to the contract. So either give the money back or whatever protections are in the contract. But then I understand, are you even allowed to do that at this point? You know, are you allowed to have a 2-year deal? So to me, it's all spelled out legally, and that's where this fight should be. Tampering, I guess, is against the rules, but cry me a river on the tampering. That they're never going to be able to prove tampering. Well, they can prove it, but everything's tampering. But hey, if this kid signed, he needs to either pay back or not be able to play. I mean, whatever deal you make, you make.
he didn't get any money yet, right? Because it's contingent on the settlement approval in April. And so the money would have not come until July. And that's another part of this, right? Lawyers will cite, I think, three different things of why the contract may not be enforceable. One, it's contingent. Two, he hasn't gotten any money. It hasn't really been executed. He hasn't gotten paid any money, right? In three, there's some other particulars in the contract. But, Dan, the contract basically, these rev share deals that schools are distributing, they basically give the school the players' NIL rights to market and advertise. And while they're not exclusive rights, right, because the player can go strike a deal with a brand or a business, they are exclusive to schools. So another school can't buy and own and use the players' NIL rights. So in a lot of ways, if the settlement is approved in April, then the contract kind of executes in a way, I guess you could say, and Miami can't pay Xavier Lucas to use his NIL and can't use his NIL. And so it kind of puts Miami in a bind of how are you going to pay him? I think we all know how they would pay him, but that's kind of at the crux of it. But the lawsuit would probably be about tortious interference, which would be the tampering, obviously. But when you sign a contract, they're going to say not tampering. They're going to say you're interfered with a legal binding document.
Just bring back Nevin Shapiro.
Yeah. I think he is back. Didn't Biden pardon him?
He was granted clemency. He was released by Trump and then got clemency from Biden.
What a time.
Bipartisan.
Miami's back, baby, Dan.
Friends in high places.
Nevin is cooking. Nevin is cooking. Don't mess. Believe me. Nevin is cooking. Yeah. Well, don't. He's free. He's back. Tell the world. Nevin's back up. You know, I just like to say, I you guys give me this Urban Meyer stuff. I just looked at our two tweets. Okay. First of all, he doesn't have a promo code. I do. So I don't know what that's all about. But his tweet, 31,000 views at Coach Urban Meyer, 31,000 views. My tweet, 46,200 views so far.
Time to end the pod.
Boom.
Yeah.
Boom.
Well, I think we're done here.
Time to end the pod, Pat.
Look at the time.
You're done.
It's 3:47 a.m. The last thing we need is Wetzel crowing about his football.
Quality football. So you got the list of the games. It looks good. Ico Sports. I'm just trying to make a living out here, people. Mm-hmm. Just trying to scratch it out.
Yeah.
All right. We'll be back Thursday. Talk more commemorative footballs and whatever else is going on. Hope you all enjoyed it. We definitely need more alcohol or any alcohol. But, yes. You know, we tried.
Always.
Yeah. Stay warm, everybody. Everyone was playing. Poor Ross was freezing. Wore a hat inside. The game was indoors, but he wore his hat.
All right, Dan. All right. I fly to the Keys tomorrow for 4 days. So while y'all are all freezing your boo-hines off, I'll be in 65 and sunny down there. It's supposed to be. Yeah. I'll be checking in from Key Largo on Thursday morning.
Okay. You're bringing your equipment. Wow. Yeah. Yep. He just shut us up pretty good. I feel humiliated and saddened. Anyway, we'll talk to you guys later this week. Thanks for sharing and listening the whole season. Season's officially over. Yeah. Off season's where it really gets crazy, though.
Oh, boy. This one especially, Dan.
Yeah, stick with us. Stick with us. We have a lot of fun when we don't have to actually talk about these games. These pesky games. Talk to you later.